morning. Welcome back. We are in week number four of the quarter and week number four of the book of Judges. It's an interesting book. A lot of kind of strange things, things that we would kind of frown on by today's sensibilities. But we'll get there. This is going to be my last week for a while. Jason Burns will be taking over next week and doing 6 weeks, and then I'll be back for the last three. Before we get started, Jeff Loving will lead us in a word of prayer. Thank you. So week four, chapter four, starting out. This is kind of a familiar thing here. The last judge, Ehud, died, and after that, the sons of Israel did evil again. Again. Thinking about this, you know, it's not just that they drifted off. It's they did evil. That reminded me of the end of chapter 1 of Romans, where there's that downward cycle of they should have known, they ignored it, then God gave them over to their own passions, and they just got worse and worse to the point where they were not just doing evil, but pursuing and creating new ways of doing evil. That's the impression I got from this, is that they're actively pursuing it, which is common. I mean, look at our society today, and not only do we, well, society at large, do evil, but condone and encourage. This is where we're, well, I should leave that alone. Going on. And the Lord did what he always had promised that he would do. He gave them over to an oppressor. In this case, it's the king of Canaan, Yabin. Interesting things here, if you look at the meanings of the names. Yavin is one who is intelligent. So that was the meaning of the king's name. He ruled from Hazor, which is up north of the Sea of Galilee. We'll see that on a map shortly. And that name just means village or settlement. So there's nothing grand about that name. It's actually in the valley near Lake Hula, which hardly exists today. In the 1950s, this small lake, it was only about 10 feet deep at a maximum. It was drained for malaria control, you know, to get rid of the mosquitoes and the diseases. And then it has been restored somewhat. You know, there was the period where everything had to be drained, and now They go through the restoration and say, no, we're ruining our ecosystem. So they've restored it somewhat. But if you look for it on a map, you're going to have a hard time finding it because it's not much more than a little shallow pond. The word that we pronounce Canaan comes from a root, kana, which means to be humbled or humble, to humble yourself. And the commander of his army, Sisera, lived in Haroshet Hagoyim. And the Wikipedia entry says that means smithy of the nations. Haroshet comes from Karash, which is said to be engraver, artificer, basically a skilled trade, a craftsman. And Hagoyim, Ha, is the in Hebrew. Goy, you're probably familiar with, as the nations, the peoples. So this place was apparently named for the skilled tradesmen that were there. Now, Sisera had an army with 900 iron chariots, which was quite unusual. And if you've got ironworks, you've got blacksmiths. So this is probably where the name came from, Haroshet Hagoyim. Where are we? Well, the capital, Hazor, is up there just a little bit north of the Sea of Galilee. And we really don't know where Haroshet Hagoyim was. But some think it was over here. Well, you can see where the yellow dot is. We'll look at that a little bit more later. We don't know how far Jairin's influence went, but apparently it was pretty significant because many of the tribes were involved in this, and many came to work. So, following our pattern, they had been oppressed for 20 years, and they cried out to the Lord, and he raised up someone to help them. So Deborah, this time, and the only time, we have a woman who was raised up. She was a prophetess, and she was a judge. This seems to be in a context of she was already a judge, but she was there in the hill country of Ephraim, just a little bit north of Benjamin. So we have where the others were, and now down here toward the bottom where that yellow cross appeared is approximately where Deborah's palm tree was, where she sat and the people would come to her from all around for judgment. Everybody okay so far? And she sent and summoned Barak. Barak was of the tribe of Naphtali, so he was up there in the northern part, right around the Sea of Galilee. And she told him that the Lord had said, go out, go gather 10,000 men from the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali, and go to Mount Tabor. And the Lord will give Sisera into your hand. He'll draw him out to the river Kishon and give him into your hand. Well, how did he respond? Well, let's say that for him. Here's Mount Tabor. It's kind of a piddly little thing. It stands about 1,500 feet high, 1,500 feet above its surroundings. It's out in the middle of this plain, all by itself. Any geologists here? Okay. Do y'all know Pilot Mountain? It's like that. It sits out there in the middle of the plain by itself, hardly anything around it. The geologists call it a monadnock, which is some fancy term for a hill that's out there all by itself. Or there's a German word, Inselberg, which is island hill. But it was out there all by itself. It was very easy to see from all around the plain because it stood up 1,500 feet. And so the trade routes the roads went right by it. They'd come out from the other side of Mount Carmel, and you could see this, and so they could direct themselves over toward that and follow it very easily. So here is a map. There's Zoar up at the top, and the Sea of Galilee is there in the middle. And those little dotted lines running around are the roads known from ancient times, from Old Testament times. And one of particular interest is the one that comes up from the lower left and comes across, well, we have the River Kishon, and Mount Tabor is that little dot there at the end of that point, sitting out in the middle of the plain. This is the Jezreel Valley. Jezreel, if you want to say it that way. Jezreel. Today, it's an agricultural breadbasket. It is very developed in terms of agriculture. Very fertile area, highly irrigated, very productive. Kadesh Naphtali, we don't really know where it was. They think it was somewhere there on the southwestern side of the Sea of Galilee. And we really don't know where Haroshet Hagoyim is either, or was, but somewhere probably down here, just to the left and above that, is Mount Carmel, which you're familiar with. There is a pass where that road goes through. There is a pass, a very easy place to go through those highlands. And so that would be a logical place to put a stronghold if you want to control the trade and the traffic and the whole area. It'd be very easy. In an hour or so with chariots, you'd be through to the south side. You've got command of the whole plain to the north side. It's a logical place, which is probably why they think it was there. Anyway, a little Google Earth here. This is what it looks like today. So you've got the Sea of Galilee up there in the upper right corner, and Mount Tabor here sort of in the middle. The city of Nazareth is that big gray splotch just to the left of Mount Tabor. It's about 5 miles to the west of Mount Tabor. Something's supposed to come up. The armies of Israel were to gather at Kadesh Naphtali. That yellow line represents a scarp. You probably have a hard time seeing it, interpreting that image. But a scarp is a sudden change in elevation. And there's the plains that were about 800 feet above mean sea level, and then it drops 800 or 900 feet very suddenly, within about a half mile or so, or a mile. So you've got a grade that's about like this, about a 2-to-1 grade. And this slope would be all rough stuff. It would be very difficult for an army to go and climb straight up that slope to get over to Mount Tabor. So they probably went south down to that squiggly line that is at the south end of that yellow thing and followed a valley that cut through that scarp. It would be much easier. You know, it's a few extra miles, but it would be a lot easier, especially if you have to haul along all the food and things that an army needs. So Deborah had told Barak, go do this. Barak answers, well, if you go with me, I will, but if you don't come with me, I'm not going. What's up with that? Why would he say such a thing? Why would he react that way? And I do not have a right answer. The text doesn't say what's going on in his head. This is open for discussion.
Maybe he figured she had a connection with God.
Well, she certainly did have a connection, but she had just given him a promise. She had told him, God is going to take care of this army for you. He's going to deliver these the enemy into your hands. So what does he want her to go along for? It's not as though she's going to wield a sword and, you know, go hack the enemy to pieces. Harold, sorry. It's very likely. I mean, did he not trust her? You know, it's one thing to say, go do this, but that's kind of saying you've got no skin in the game if you're going to sit over here and we're going to go fight. So, I don't know. But apparently it was not a very good reaction. How did she respond? Okay, I'll go. But because you have responded this way, the honor is not going to be yours, but your enemy is going to be sold into the hand of a woman. Now, I don't mean to be insulting when I say it that way, but think about this. Here you've got this man who is a commander of the armies, and she says, a woman's going to get your glory. What would have been yours? That's why he responded the way he did is, you know, all we can do is speculate. Yeah. Did you all hear that? Okay. Any other comments? James. You're in trouble now. Yeah. She said it was as though he was testing her. Do we really need to do this? And she said, we're going. It's an interesting thing. Certainly, what we can draw from that is when God says, do it, I'm going to do it for you, should you say, or trust him? Do we ever learn? Jeff had mentioned about thinking like she's some sort of good luck charm, a talisman, you know. It's going to be okay if she's there, but not, or that she's there to encourage or something. She had a good ways to go. She was probably 50, 60 miles, you know, 50 miles as the crow flies. And going through the hill country, it would have been fairly rough going to get from her place in Ephraim all the way up to Naphtali. So it was several days' journey at least just to get there. But she was willing to go. Now this just gets thrown in. We've got to introduce this other character, Heber, the Kenite. This was, we say, from the sons of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses. So this was sort of a family-related, you know, kind of distant relations here with Jethro and so on. An interesting thing here, it says he separated himself from the Kenites, and he went up here to this place way north. Most of the Kenites were way down in the south area. But he separated and went way up there to the north, very close to the Sea of Galilee. Or at least that's where we think it is. We don't actually know where Tsa'ananim is. Tsa'ananim. But it was listed or mentioned as on the border of Naphtali and the one next to it. Not Issachar. I should know this. Anyway. So we come to the battle. They had gathered their 10,000 men there at Mount Tabor. They had gone out to Mount Tabor. Sisera hears of it. Here are these 10,000 of these upstarts, and they're going to cause trouble. So he's going to go out and take care of it. So he took his 900 chariots of iron and all his people and went out to the river Kishon. Didn't actually go to Mount Tabor, but to the river Kishon, which is what God had said would happen, that he would draw him out to the river Kishon. Now, the river Kishon, today, you can hardly find it. It's a piddly little stream. I went on Google Earth, and I zoomed in as far as I could go, and it can't be 20 feet wide. You know, that is not a serious river. However, what's happened today is that this thing has been gathered up and put into reservoirs and things. Most of the water is taken for irrigation. So it's not like it used to be. In biblical times, it was probably somewhat bigger and somewhat wilder. Now, my profession has been as a hydrologist. So I look at this thing and I think, now, what does all this mean? You've got this small river flowing through a plain. And it's even a seasonal river. It doesn't flow all year round because they've got dry periods and wet periods. But a very small river on a relatively large plain could flood dramatically and very quickly. So if a storm came up and say you got 3 or 4 inches of rain very quickly, you'd have a whole bunch of runoff. It's all heading down to this river, and the river suddenly goes out of its banks and floods considerably. We're not told that this is what happened, but later on we'll see something where apparently forces of nature were involved in this battle. So he went out to the Kishon. And Deborah told Barak, "Arise, this is the day which the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Behold, the Lord has gone out before you." There's an emphasis all the way through this of the Lord being first. From the beginning, she told him, the Lord will deliver him into your hands. The Lord will go before you. He just had to go. So here's the battle scene. We have Kadesh Naphtali over there, supposedly on the Sea of Galilee. The Israelite forces gathered there and then went over to Mount Tabor. The blue dot, our supposed location of Harosheth Hagoyim. And he brings his forces out here somewhere to the river Kishon. Exactly where, we don't know. Some people think that the actual battle was somewhere between Megiddo and Taanach. Taanach. These names are fun. But they come down there. And then the Israelites went from Mount Tabor down to meet him at the River Kishon and engaged the battle. And, well, the Canaanites were being whooped. So what does Sisera do? He heads for the hills. He pops up and he gets out of his chariot and takes off on foot and heads up to Tsaananim. We'll come back to that part in just a bit. And the rest of the Israelite forces chased the Canaanites all the way back to Haroshet Hagoyim, and not one of them survived. Now, should I make any comments about the Israelites being red and the other ones being sort of a Carolina blue? That's what was on the map to begin with, so I just followed the color scheme. So here is Sisera. And he went up, and as he was fleeing, he came to the tent of Heber and his wife Yael. And Yael meets him and says, "Oh, come on in." And he says, "Hide me so that if anybody comes, tell them nobody's here." Okay. She took him in. She puts him under a carpet, hides him. He says he's famished. He's thirsty. He's been in a battle all day and has run for his life. And asks, "Give me some water." So she opens, one version says a jar, another says a goat skin, but gives him milk to drink. Nothing like warm milk before going to sleep. And he was exhausted. He fell asleep. And then, while he was asleep, she took a tent peg and a mallet and drove it through his head, pegged him to the ground. Okay, that sounds gruesome. But here was the commander of the opposing forces that, by all accounts, normally should have fallen in battle and have his glory. At least he went down fighting. But he ran away, and instead of the commander of the other army meeting him on the field of battle and striking him down, this woman privately drives a tent peg through his head and killed him. When Barak and his forces chased after Sisera, they got there, and she says, "Come in and see the man that you were looking for." And there he was. So God subdued Yabin on that day before the sons of Israel. He went before them. He accomplished the work. Reminds me, what's that? Is it Ephesians that we were created for good works that he prepared beforehand just so that we would walk in them? We have to go. He's already got the works. We just have to go do it. And then going forward, Israel, it says, was pressed harder and harder until Yabin was completely destroyed. So they completely threw them off and had no more trouble with them. Brings us to chapter 5. Okay, we've had all this scene and the battle and the victory and all this, and now Deborah and Barak have their song of victory. This is my favorite verse in the whole book. That the leaders led in Israel, that the people volunteered. Bless the Lord. They did what they were supposed to do. Now, all of chapter 5 is poetic language. And in reading it, if you look at different translations, I seriously wondered if they're coming from the same text. Because the way the various translators would render parts of this, you could get a pretty different idea of what went on. This one happens to be from the Complete Jewish Bible. When leaders in Israel dedicate themselves and the people volunteer, you should all bless Adonai. Pretty much the same idea. But the leaders lead, the people volunteer. They're not drugged behind. It's, we've got work to do, let's go. Okay, we're going. Does anybody have any other versions that they'd like to read for that? When the people willingly offer themselves, yes. Because I don't know. I would say just a word of caution when you're reading some of this stuff that is the poetry. Because the translators are just trying to figure out what they're trying to say and put that into English, and it doesn't always work very well, be cautious. Don't put too much emphasis on a particular word or a particular phrase. Look at a bunch of different translations and try to get a sense from all of them, because no single one is probably going to convey it. And even if you're a student of Hebrew, you'd still be cautious. Yes. That's a good point. When the ones decide things like, well, we can't use the language that's actually there, we've got to put it into today's sensibilities. In fact, we'll get to a point on that later on. Going on, Deborah was saying that it wasn't safe to travel on the main roads. That is, before, you know, the situation leading up to this, it wasn't safe to travel on the main roads. The people would go by the byways, the little side paths. After all, you're the oppressed people. You are the ones that anybody can do whatever they want to, and you're not going to get justice. So you get robbed, and you go to the Canaanites, and you say, one of your guys robbed me. Taha. So what? You're an Israelite. We don't care. So what's your best move? Avoid them as much as you possibly can. That means don't go on the main roads. Take the little side paths to get where you're going. Stay out of sight as much as you possibly can. It was not safe to live outside a walled city. The peasantry ceased in Israel. The term comes from Hebrew peretzah, meaning an open region, hamlet, an unwalled village or without walls. So it wasn't safe for them to be out someplace where they were open to attack. Until the new judge arose, until Deborah arose. Now, an interesting thing in there, she identifies herself as a mother in Israel. What are we to take from that? Well, we're not told. It's just a phrase that's in there. So we're trying to understand, why would she say this? You know, until she rose, I, Deborah, a mother in Israel. arose. Yes, a mother takes care of people, but her normal place is taking care of her family. A larger family. Is this, okay, from the male perspective, is she saying, basically, where are the men? So she's saying, I'm not anything special. I'm just a mother, an ordinary person here. But she arose, and God spoke through her, and they were directed to the battle, and they eventually went and were victorious. Now, Judges 5:8. New gods were chosen, then war was in the gates. And looking at various translations, there are a number of ways that's delivered. Was this, new gods were chosen, does that mean the people had gone after these other gods, the Baals and the Ashtaroth and the Asherim and all? Is that what it's about? And then the war came as punishment? Now, this is a very, very brief statement and seems to have a lot in it, but it's hard to figure out exactly what we should take from it. Here. That's, probably it. You know, that is the pattern that we see through the whole book of Judges. The unfaithfulness, going worshiping other gods, and then the oppressors. In part B, not a shield or spear is seen among 40,000. Everybody seems to pretty much, I mean, the translations seem to pretty much agree there. Sounds like there was nobody to fight. There was nobody to stand up here. Any other thoughts on that? Oh, we're coming there. 5:9, my heart goes out to the commanders of Israel, the volunteers among the people. Bless the Lord. That sounds an awful lot like the first verse we mentioned, 5:2. Giving thanks to the people that went out to fight, who responded to the call, and also giving thanks to God. Then we get to a little bit, she's giving thanks, but then exhorting others to give thanks. Those of you that have it so good, who ride on white donkeys. The white donkey was like the luxury car of today. You know, a white donkey was kind of a status symbol. The important people had those. The wealthy people had a white donkey rather than just some old tawny or gray thing. It was cool. Who walk on the roads? Remember, before this, they were stuck taking the byways, hiding. They couldn't walk openly in their own neighborhoods. So now, you who have it so good, sing. Tell of your deliverance. Then there's a listing of those who came to battle, to aid in the battle, and those who, well, and those who didn't. We have almost everyone mentioned here. Ephraim, Benjamin, Machir, who was one of the sons of Manasseh, and something I read said that they had settled in East Manasseh across the Jordan. But I don't know if we should rule out the West Manasseh, because apparently they were part of it too. I mean, the battle was right on the edge of their territory. Zebulun, Issachar, and it mentions Barak, but Barak was of the tribe of Naphtali. So, you know, he had gone to get 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun. So these are the ones that participated. And those who didn't, Reuben. Reuben gets kind of a, you know, amongst those of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. Why did you sit among the sheepfolds to listen to the piping for the flocks? Among the tribes of Reuben, there were great resolutions of heart, great searchings. Sounds like they had, well, we should go. I want to go. I'm going to go. But they didn't go. If you go back into the time of Joshua, Reuben and Gad and half of Manasseh settled on the east side of the Jordan, lands that had already been conquered. And when they said, we want to settle here, Moses was kind of upset. What, you're not going to go with your brothers and actually conquer the land? Oh, and they said, no, no, we'll go with them. And when they're all settled in, then we'll go back to our families over there. And they did. But here, the call goes out, and they didn't go. Gilead, which would be the area there of Gad, the lavender area to the east side of the Jordan, did not go. Dan, which would be this part just above Judah on the coast, did not go. They stayed with their ships. And Asher. Now, Asher, if you look at the geography there, there's kind of a mountain range that runs between Asher and Naphtali. Naphtali. There's a ridge, and physically separates them. There weren't any roads across there. And if the Canaanites were in that valley of the Jordan, they may not have bothered going over there. We don't know if Asher was really part of what was under this oppression, but they still didn't go and help. There were natural forces mentioned. Verse 20 says the stars fought from their courses. I have no idea how to interpret that. And verse 21, the Kishon, the ancient torrent, swept them away. The Kishon must have been doing something that you don't see today. But was there a big storm and a flood? If it would have, even just flooding out over the land, the chariots would have been running on mud then and would have been basically useless. We don't really know, but this is what's there. And then verse 23, the angel of the Lord says, curse Meroz. They didn't come to the help. We don't even know where Meroz is, if it was a city. Some think it was a city north of Mount Tabor. If you look, there was a comment saying in the Talmud, they thought it was a planet, an unknown planet out there somewhere, some celestial body, because the previous thing had mentioned the stars. So they were just saying by inference, it must be something out there. 24 through 27. Yael gets this praise of, you know, she had killed the enemy commander, fulfilling Deborah's prophecy, and so she has that honor. Sisera's mother, gets a little bit. She's looking through the lattice, waiting for her son to come back. And her servants are saying, oh, they're busy with the spoil. And even then saying, a maiden or two for every soldier. Now, this is following one of those comments earlier. New American Standard says maiden. New King James says girl. The English Standard Version is true to the Hebrew, where the word is womb, which is probably a comment on how captured girls were treated. You know, you become a slave, you are at this guy's disposal. Not a pretty picture. The conclusion in 531, let all your enemies perish, be like the rising of the sun. Those who fear the Lord, be like the rising of the sun. The land was undisturbed for 40 years. We have this period of peace, which is, again, the pattern. And next week, you get Judges chapter 6 for the beginning of Gideon. Gideon gets 2 weeks, and we're done. Sorry, we ran a little over this time.